The women of Islam get more than their fair share of the West's pity, at least according to Leila Lalami. Lalami is a Moroccan writer and critic for The Nation magazine, and a novelist. Lalami says Islamic women are caught between two competing worldviews, neither of which knows how to help them.
We Muslim women seem to inspire a lot of compassion from very, very different sides of the political spectrum. On the one hand, you have radical, or Islamic radicals rather, that pose as liberators so that they claim that their interpretation of the Quran, the Muslim holy book, is valid, and that if only we were to apply this true interpretation of the book, then women would be set free. And then on the other hand, at the other end of the spectrum, you have Western powers that have an agenda of hegemony and that claim, or their leaders rather, claim that they want to free Muslim women, but their actions actually belie those claims. So, for example, you have the fact that George W. Bush, when he went into Afghanistan in October of 2001, claimed that he was doing it as much to hunt down Osama bin Laden as to free, quote-unquote, the women of cover. This despite the fact that only 6 months later, his government was providing financial support for the Taliban. And despite the fact that he continues to support regimes like Saudi Arabia and others that have, you know, that give virtually no rights to women. So we have this, we're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place, if you will.
Yeah. The pity is a difficult thing then. It's in some ways by both parties meant with the best of intentions.
You can
argue with them, but it's the result of the pity that's the problem. The women have to bear up under this.
Exactly. I mean, I have no doubt that both sides are well-meaning and that they truly believe that they have the best interests of Muslim women at heart. But the problem is that, I mean, in my opinion, Muslim women really feel that they're caught in between these two positions. And the reality is both of these positions ignore the fact that there are many, many, many homegrown organizations throughout the Muslim world that fight for women's rights and that work with women in their communities to further their rights and wanting to save Muslim women from the outside, if you will, or through religion or whatever it is, a lot of times tends to circumvent those movements and not really bring them to the table. That, to me, is the unfortunate reality. So, you know, in the case of Afghanistan, for example, there was an organization that was fighting for women's rights. And, you know, nobody asked them what what they thought about how things should be conducted. So
it seems to me that there are three things essentially here. You have these well-intentioned parties on the extremes, neither of which is actually concerned very deeply with what the women want. Mm-hmm. And then you have the women in the middle who end up having less power than they should because they have to deal with these outsiders. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the outside and then come back to the middle. You
sure.
quote an Egyptian writer, Saeed Kutub, who was, I gather, very influential, especially among the radical Islamist movements.
Yes. Sayyid Qutb was an Egyptian dissident. Initially, he had gone to study in the United States, and when he came back to Egypt, he had actually, his experience in the United States led him to be thoroughly disgusted with secularism. And he preached in his books, in his writings, a return to tradition. That return to tradition also included traditional roles for women. Women were supposed to be confined to the home in the sense that their roles were supposed to be confined in the home. And men would be the heads of the family, and women would be led by men. And, you know, he viewed working outside the home as an affliction. And so, I mean, he had fairly retrograde views about women. But again, in his mind, he believed that this was the way to save women.
Yeah. And to save
society. Themselves.
Yeah.
Yes. And to actually advance society, to advance Egyptian society. That was what he saw as the prognosis that what should happen. So,
how much influence did he have? Is he still? He's been gone for decades now.
Yes, how
influential are his ideas?
He's exerted quite a powerful influence both within Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood and outside of Egypt. So he's one of the main philosophers of sort of the more traditional interpretations of Islamic law, for example. So, yeah, he still continues to exert a lot of influence today.
He's by no means alone, though, in this, right?
Of course. Yeah, of course not. And so you see, for example, in Algeria, you see in the 1990s when the Islamic Salvation Front was trying to get into power, one of the cornerstones of their political agenda was, in fact, a return to tradition for the roles of women, just as Sayyid Qutb had written. So they, you know, their solution, for example, for high unemployment was to turn over the jobs of working women to idle men. That was one.
what a good idea!
That was one example of their political agenda, and which is not to say that all of it was bad and that it should be rejected wholesale, but it's really, really troubling that in terms of women, their agenda was particularly dangerous. And so it's, you know, you continue to see this, and it despite the fact that it is dangerous. Now, the interesting thing is that a number of women actually do adhere to these movements.
So there are women making the case also that it would be better
as well,
for...
Yes. So this sort of ideology does find adherence among women as well. So, for example, if you look at the situation of Morocco, you have it's not quite a party because they haven't really been allowed to function as a party, but it's an Islamic group, and it's called Al-Adl wal-Ihsan, which means justice and Ihsan, I guess, would be translated as doing good or something.
Justice and doing good.
Justice, yeah, and charity. So the leader of this charity movement is Sheikh Yassin, and his daughter is this woman named Nadia Yassin, who's essentially sort of the public face of the group. And she, again, believes in a certain way of approaching the women's rights. Now, a couple of years ago, the women's groups, which had long been asking for a reform to the Mudawana, which is the family law in Morocco, they had been asking for a reform of that law. And finally, a couple of years ago, it went into parliament and it was passed. And it granted, it was just a sweeping reform of that law, and it granted women much greater access. I mean, not quite equality under the law, but it was an amazing change. For example, the fact that women had equal access to divorce, the fact that they had just all sorts of newer rights that they could enjoy. Now, this woman, Nadia Yassin, actually marched in the street with her group in a demonstration against the reforms. So you had a demonstration in Rabat, the capital city, and you had a counter demonstration in Casablanca, the commercial city. One was in favor of those reforms and one was against it. Now, the reforms ended up being passed, and Nadia Yassin later saw that she had made a tactical mistake, you know, and that because the reforms did prove to be quite popular.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting situation in that way, to just to see that there are, in fact, women who do support that view and who believe, for a variety of reasons, political or religious or social, that going through strict interpretations of the Quran is the way to go. So there's just different views about it.
It's interesting, not least because of the attitude of many Westerners toward women in the Islamic world seems to be that they have no power and are to be pitied, as you said, for that, and therefore that it is our responsibility as Western proponents of civilization to fight for their rights.
To bring the light of freedom upon us poor women.
Yeah. Well, of course, everybody always has alternatives or ulterior motives. We know that. But but still, you know, Westerners believe they are doing the right thing in saying women in many Arab societies especially do not have the rights that we feel they should have. What's wrong with
advocating
them?
Or that they, more importantly, that they Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong, absolutely not. And how can one not be moved by the images that we see on our TV screens? How can anyone not be moved when we see a woman who is covered with a burqa on the streets of Kabul being beaten by a member of the religious police? I mean, you would have to have a heart of stone not to feel that something should be done for a person like this. So, I mean, I think that it does come from very good intentions. The trouble is that when you want to help, do you bring help? I mean, when you want to help a person, do you do what they ask you to do to help, or do you do what you think they should be done to help? So this is really the question. Do you work with the homegrown organizations, or do you try to impose your own views about how everything should be done?
Is there, do you think, any reasonable justification for the idea that women living under radical Islamist law need help?
I mean, I think that it is possible to provide help. I'm not at all opposed to providing help, quite the contrary. And I'm not saying that we should leave things alone just because this is the Muslim world and, you know, this is their culture and leave them to it. It's really quite wrong to think in that way, in my opinion. But again, just to go back to the main point that I see, which is that instead of talking at women, talking with them and being involved with their chosen organizations in order to help their rights. So, I mean, there are, in the case of Morocco, for example, there's many organizations that work for the advancement of women, for women's rights.
Are there,
and a lot of, to make that point also, there was a poll that the New York Times reported on. It was conducted by the Gallup organization, and it was done in 8 Muslim countries. Obviously, there are, you know, 57 Muslim countries, and this study is ongoing, but the first 8 countries that they have done shows that Muslim women are not concerned with the things that Westerners seem to be most concerned about, namely the veil, which there's an obsession with it seems. Muslim women actually don't rate that as being their biggest problem. They rate, you know, war and economic corruption and other issues far higher on their agenda. And they also, and this is, I think, really quite interesting, a vast majority of them associate the West with gender equality, which, you know, one might expect, but one might not necessarily expect is that they do not think that importing Western values wholesale is going to necessarily help them. So they want to find their own solutions to things.
Leila Lalame wrote the article, The Missionary Position, for The Nation magazine. She's the author of the novel Hope and Other Dangerous Pursuits.